Good evening. Evening? Where is it? 5 o'clock. Close to evening. Getting very close to evening. Actually, once it ticks over 5 o'clock, you're allowed to drink beer. I'm pretty sure that's the way it works. Now, this is the joy of doing one of these in the evening. We discussed this evening, right? Agreed this evening. Every couple of weeks. Now, because people will ask if I don't say otherwise, the beer of choice is Bespoke. Bespoke comes from Canberra in Australia, which is our nation's capital. Not a lot of other interesting stuff comes from Canberra, but this one I particularly like, Bespoke Sprocket. So this might actually help the headache, which I'll get onto in a moment. Now, sponsor stuff first. EdgeScan, got a brand new sponsor this week. So big thank you to EdgeScan for coming on board. Award-winning full-stack vulnerability management solution. All vulnerabilities expertly verified for pulse positive freedom. Did I say pulse positive? We'll get to why my speech is slurred, and it's not because I've had one mouthful of beer. False positive freedom. And of course, any of you who have used automated tooling before will know that false positives are the bane of your existence. I recall many occasions working with organizations with tooling which spat out so many false positives, people start to ignore it. So actually weeding out false positives is a pretty critical thing. So big thanks to EdgeScan for coming on board and being a brand new sponsor this week. I was going to say I haven't had any brand new ones for a while, but I did have Microsoft last week, but they're kind of familiar too. So thanks to you joining in on the comments as well. I will read these questions and so on shortly as well. So there was a beer-related one. What's my favorite beer? So, well, good question. I am very particular to the Bespoke Sprocket. That's quite a nice beer. It's a very typical IPA. Probably the one that I would say, if you had to go, what is my absolute all-time favorite beer at the moment, I would say it's Pirate Life Double IPA. And that's an Aussie brand. They make that down in South Australia, I think. And it's just a really like super hoppy, nice, I only drink one of those kind of double IPAs. That it is a Friday night. That may yet be on the agenda, which would be nice. So I've got a bunch of like quasi-random things I'm going to cover in my list. Because what I do is I always just make like bullet points and I try and get through the bullet points. Then people have questions on things like this. So when there is a question, I will jump over and have a look at that. So there's a question here around Zoom and its security issues. Oh, boy. What I find fascinating about Zoom, I'm just trying to remember the numbers off the top of my head, but Zoom went from something like 10 million active users a day in, I think, December through to about 200 million active users a day by the time they got through to, like, March, April. So, like, just imagine for a moment any organization suddenly growing 20 times over in a really, really short period of time. So I think the situation with Zoom was Zoom came under the spotlight very, very rapidly because of its crazy growth. Now, there's a valid question to be asked. Why did Zoom get so popular? And like WebEx, for example, you'd hardly hear about, or BlueJeans, or any number of other different services out there. Well, it turns out Zoom is actually really easy for people to use. So I think a lot of Zoom's problems were it was very, very easily accessible. They were very, very enterprise-centric, but now you had mums and dads and normal people using Zoom and basically cocking a lot of it up. So, you know, not setting basic security things on there, publishing Zoom URLs in places they probably shouldn't have been publishing them. So to be honest, that the things that came out of Zoom are, I think, commensurate to what you'd expect from suddenly having a huge amount of scrutiny on it. Now, what I do think Zoom has done really well is they have obviously invested very, very heavily in trying to get the security things together. Now, because they just had like 20x growth, I would imagine that they have quite a bit of money to spend on getting their security things together. Also doing things like hiring Alex Damos, who came from Facebook beforehand and is a very noteworthy, very intelligent person. Like that seems to be a good indication from Zoom that they need to get on top of this and they're taking it seriously. I sort of always asked at the time when people are like, oh, what do you think about the Zoom security issues? You're like, well, what about the WebEx ones? Oh, but no one's really using WebEx at the moment, so it's not in it's not in the public eye. So look, I use Zoom quite a bit, and I literally just got spam for flights. Who the hell's sending me spam? Charter flight. Charter flight, that'd be cool. I wonder if you could... No, I'll look at that later, and I'll put that on silent. Anyway, that's enough of Zoom. Let me have a look here. Hi from Belgium, not quite beer o'clock here. Of course it's beer o'clock. It's always beer o'clock in Belgium. I remember Belgium. So I work in Sydney. Okay, let's go. You might want to change the episode number on the video. Oh, shit. I'll change it later. You know what I do? I copy and paste. And then usually I remember to change something after I copy and paste. Oh, you know what it is. It's 204 plus one. Now, why's my head sore? Oh, I will get back to the IoT stuff, which is metaphorically hurting my head. What is physically hurting my head is as we have been in a let's call it a COVID era. Jeez, I did hit my head hard. A COVID era. I have been focusing very, very heavily on my health, beer aside. And every single day I've been absolutely smashing my exercise goals and everything else that the Apple Watch does like to track. So where am I at the moment? If I look at my awards, my longest move streak, I'm at a 137-day streak of closing all of my rings every single day. And a lot of that is because I've been doing a lot of walking, which is great, a lot of bike riding, a lot of tennis, a lot of wakeboarding, which brings me to the sore head. So I often go to the wake park. So we've got a wake park here. And if you don't know what a wake park is, picture a course, must be like 500-600 meters long. It's like a big rectangle. It's got big cable on the top, takes you around, and you hold on, and it takes you around there. And then you've got obstacles and things like that, which you can jump over. Not how I hurt my head, but I did get a new board yesterday because I wanted one specifically designed for the wake park. Get up at 5 o'clock this morning, go out for an early wakeboard behind the boat, and what can only be described as ambition over ability, I fell backwards on the water and just smacked my head super hard at 21 mile an hour, which I checked before for those of you who are in more modern times than people still in miles an hour, it was 33k an hour. And the reason I said miles is that's what the boat measures it in. Totally different story there. And I just, oh man, like I hit it hard. And it was just at the time, like I got up, I had another go, and then I went, that's probably bad enough. And then I went out bike riding, and I went and played tennis for an hour, and I went bike riding again. And I only just got home after that and went, I kind of feel like shit. So that is why my head is like literally sore. And then it is metaphorically sore for all the IoT reasons, which I'll get into shortly. So looking at comments here, Robert Cook, hi from Southport. That's pretty much where I hit my head today in Southport, just out in front of Charis at about, I don't know, when was it, 6:30 a.m. this morning. Hi from Oslo. And then we're on Zoom again. We're going to skip past Zoom. I wrote about Apple tracks your exercise time. Apple tracks everything. I know that I'm not. The only time I'm worried about is when I haven't met my exercise goals and then I'm going out at like 10 p.m. to do the last few K to close my rings. That said, there's a couple of comments here in the Apple side of things. We know that all of these devices, by their very nature, record a huge amount of information. I worry less about Apple. So I'm basically on an Apple Microsoft ecosystem. So PC, 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 iPad, iPhone, Apple Watch. And I've been that way for probably a decade. And one thing that I think Apple have sort of...
I couldn't find anything called iPad, iPhone, Apple Watch set up in Find My.
Were we about to talk about privacy and then Siri's just been listening the whole time? I was literally about to say one thing I think Apple's done quite well is they have carved out quite a niche around privacy, which they're obviously very subtly taking shots at Google for, because Google, of course, is a very advertising-centric organization. They make their money out of being into everything but also having a lot of access to your data so that they can target things for you. I mean, they literally have a massive ad platform, which we all see every day, unless you're running a pie hole. Run the pie hole. If you don't know what a pie hole is, Google my name and pie hole. And Apple has the luxury, I guess, of not being in that business. So they're not running ads. They're not running Google Analytics. They're not needing to target things to you via free email platforms. So it's just been interesting, like, watch the Apple keynotes, and I guess we'll get another one with new phones and things launched next month. But consistently the messaging, even all the way back to Jobs, but Steve Cook over and over, Tim Cook over and over again is reiterating the privacy-centric nature of Apple. So I'm happy to trade off some potential risk with a company which I think is actually genuinely very privacy-centric to be able to do things like track my exercise stuff because I'm feeling great from all the exercise. So there's that. Now, moving on. Oh, actually, here's something to talk about because of the fun thing, and I'm going to talk about the IoT stuff in a moment. I got an award, which was really cool because I didn't know I was going to get an award, and apparently they're actually sending me something. So there's this really it's really odd. There are a lot of awards that pop up where someone will say, you know, hey, you've just got an award for like one of the 20 best InfoSec bloggers from Australia who wakeboard, or like just some, you know, screwy thing like that. Could you please promote your winning here? And you're like, this is basically just spam asking me to, you know, up your thing. Now, there are other awards which are actually kind of cool. I mean, some of them are in little trophies on the back wall there. The Info European Security Blogger Awards, things like that. Obviously, the MVP stuff is really cool. The one the other day, which was a really nice surprise, was the ISC2 Global Achievement Awards. And they, apparently they're sending stuff. They asked me for my address and I gave it to them. So we'll see what actually comes. But I got an award for Senior Professional Award. Now, it does feel kind of weird to say senior. It feels very weird. I guess I've been doing this for the InfoSec bit for more than 10 years and the programming bit for about 25 years. But Asia Pacific is me and Have I Been Pwn. Interestingly, it says for Asia Pacific, Troy Hunt, founder, Have I Been Pwn, for adding new APIs to his website. Probably shouldn't tell them I haven't. Oh, no, I have done some new APIs. I've done the Pwn passwords, relatively new. Come back to that too. I've got a good story on that. The site has nearly 3 million active email subscribers, actually about 3.3, so stats are a little bit out of date there, and contains records of almost 8 billion accounts. A little bit out of date there as well. But be that as it may, at least ISC2 is a proper award, not just a please pimp our things now. All right, so there was that. Now, IoT. So I was talking about IoT. And in the little image accompanying this live stream, I was holding up a PCB here. This is a Sonoff SV. And the value proposition is, first of all, they're super, super cheap. So they're less than 10 Aussie dollars. I think it was about $8 something. It does have a little Wi-Fi module, the little black box on there. I've got to get near my face. There's a Wi-Fi module. And this is where I started going down the rabbit hole, because the idea of this is it's meant to open my garage door. Now, I ordered this very early on in my IoT adventures, and it took quite a while to come, and it came. And then it was only two or three days ago, I actually got to the point where I said, okay, let's go and flash this thing, because you've got to flash it with Tasmoto firmware and then join it all up to your network, and then I can integrate into Home Assistant. And as soon as I went to do that, I realized I didn't have an Arduino something-something, and I forget exactly what the something-something is, but I now have one of these as well. So I now got another PCB board, PCB, on the end of a USB connector with a whole bunch of jumpers and a cable. And I got to the point today, and it's probably because I'd hit my head and I just really didn't feel it doing it, where I got to join these two together and then solder some shit and flash it and then put it in a box and put it up near my garage motor. And I just kind of went, what the hell am I doing? Why do I have so many absolute complete maker bits just to do something which I thought would be quite simple? But having said that, I am making good progress in other places. I think last week I mentioned I had some of these are Atom lights. So these are down lights. So they're LED lights. They actually have a normal power socket on the end of them. So this is now the thing. I was actually surprised. A lot of people went, wow, I'd never seen this before. So at least in Australia, the general consensus now, when you have downlights on your roof, is that you have these guys just here. So there's a whole bunch of different style LEDs, different brightnesses, different wattage, different physical designs. Maybe you don't want like a white surround on here. Maybe you want a silver one. Maybe you want them recessed a little bit more into the roof so that when you sort of look down a hallway, you don't necessarily see the light itself. You just see the glow. And these can be super, super cheap. So I went into, for the Aussies, I went to Beacon Lighting yesterday, and you can get these for as cheap as about $10, $11, $12 just for the light. So you're no longer changing bulbs. You're changing the entire unit if you need to. So that's kind of cool, and it does just have a normal plug on the end. So you literally pull it out of the ceiling, plug it in, job done. So if you want to change them later on, they're easy too. Now, this one has WiZ-connected firmware on it, which is not particularly great. Now, I just noticed someone here saying, WTF are downlights. They're lights that point down. Any other questions? In all seriousness, so here's what they look like. So they literally sit inside the roof. These ones, I'm a bit tempted to just pull one out of the roof, but I won't do that. These ones have little clips on them. So you basically recess it into the roof. They sit pretty flush with the roof, and they literally just shine light down. And then depending on the ones you get, the angle of the beam changes, and then how light they are changes and everything else. These internet-connected ones, frankly, are a little bit of a pain because they don't seem to be real good at maintaining state. So if you change the color or the brightness or something via software, they don't seem to maintain. So I might actually see if there's some firmware that I can update on that. But it brought me to another discussion with my local Sparky. For those of you not from Australia, Sparky is an electrician. So I got a good bloke I've been using a bit for other things. And there's a media room where I've got six lights on the roof, and I'm redoing a whole bunch of things, and I might do a crib style video later on about what I've done in my house. But anyway, so I said, oh, I want these six lights, and I want them all to be internet connected, but I want normal humans to be able to use them. So like if my mum and dad come around, I want them to be able to use the switches on the wall and the lights go on and off, use the dimmer, and they get brighter and everything else. But I also want to be able to control them via, let's say, my phone or via events from Home Assistant, you know, sun goes down, turn lights on, et cetera. So what we've eventually arrived at, and this is after much discussion on the internet as well, is to break it down in simple terms, I wanted to have normal ceiling lights. So this particular room, I don't need to have colored lights. It's like a media room where we watch TV or movies or things like that. I don't feel there needs to be colors there, so I can take all the internet-connected stuff out. I do want to be able to dim it, which is fine because I've been able to dim lights for a long time, and I want to be able to get normal everyday downlights. And, you know, they might be nicer downlights that are like $30 each. And just tangentially, these will replace halogens. So if you've ever had halogen lights before, they're an absolute bloody nightmare. And the reason they're a nightmare is because of multiple things. Number one, they burn really hot. Like places literally burn down because of halogen lights and burning so hot. They use a lot of electricity. They fail really, really regularly. And I have 130 of them in my house. So it's a largish place. But whoever renovated this place more than 5 years ago before I bought it, in fact, I think the reno was like 13 years ago, they just put frickin' halogens everywhere, and I'm just perpetually going around replacing halogens. The only good thing about them is they have 90 mil radius. In fact, they're meant to be 92 mil radius holes, or diameter rather, holes in the roof, so I can pop them out and I can pop in things like this. So anyway, I said to him, look, I want to be able to get normal LED lights to replace the halogens, and I would also like to have nice switches on the wall. And I'm going to drop it into the... Oh, I forgot to say I'm live. I'll tweet that. I'm going to drop this into the comments, but the light switches I've found are on Sparky Direct. I told you Sparky would come up. So for those of you who are interested, just drop this in the comments. I'm going to use these Clipsal Saturn Zen lights. Now, there's a couple of reasons for this. So what I want to be able to do is I want to have lights that when the internet toggles them on and off, and I'm going to show you how I do this with the internet in a moment, there's not a physical state of the light that implies something opposite to what it actually is. Now, what I mean by this is imagine you've got one of the classic light switches and you put the switch up, that means the light's on, and then the light comes on, and then you put the switch down and the light goes off. I didn't want to have a situation where it's like I put the light off, or rather up, and the switch says it's on, but then digitally behind the scenes I've turned it off and now the switch doesn't reflect the state of the actual light. So I wanted like push button lights where whether the button, well, I'll rephrase it, whether the light is on or off, the button itself doesn't change position. So you'll see these Clipsal Saturn Zen lights, or switches rather, are just push button. Now, they do have an LED on them, and the LED can light up when there's power going to the light and obviously off when there's not. Now, behind that, I'm going to put Shelly One Wi-Fi enabled switches. Now, the Shelly Ones, the way they always promote them is they say they're the same size as two Oreo cookies, one on top of the other. So imagine like two cookies, biscuits for us here, sitting on top of each other. That's how big they are. So you can put them in behind the switch. And you've got to have enough room behind the switch in the wall. What that means is normal-looking switch, normal-looking light, but an IoT-enabled switch at the back. And what that can do is either switch it digitally or switch it using the normal switch. And it doesn't matter which one is on or which one is off. So if you've turned off the physical light via the switch, you can still digitally turn it back on. So that's what I'm going to do, and hopefully I'm going to start getting that in maybe next week, and that looks like it's going to be the best of all worlds. Now, let's see his comments. There's a question here. Did you manage to sort out the light switch thing? There you go. I hope that answers your questions. If it's 15 years or so, that makes sense, because back then halogens were the cheapest in power usage. Burton, hello. Hello, Burton. Yeah, look, it made sense then, and I think it just seems to be one of these things where the technology has progressed, and now these actually make sense to use. So we'll see, and I think what will happen is over time I'll just gradually start to replace lights in different rooms as I renovate them or repaint them or do things like that. But as I started looking at the Shellys, and the joy of the Shellys, by the way, just to go down that hole a little bit, first of all, they are approved for use in Australia. Now, this is a big thing because for some stupid reason, Australia wants to have all its own standards and approvals, because even though you can use them in America and the UK and other parts of the world, which for all intents and purposes have very similar standards around safety and stuff, gets to Australia and someone here says, oh, we better make sure they work here. You know, like what if a wallaby jumped over? I don't know what it is. For some reason, we've got to do that here for anything electrical. We've got to do it here for cars or things like that. So we have ADRs, Australian Design Rules. And even though it's a fantastic, yeah, let's say modern German car that's safe everywhere in the world, they send some here and it's like, well, we better crash a few and make sure they're okay. I don't know why. Anyway, the Shellys are approved for use in Australia, which is good. So that's very important. Also, they're about $25 Aussie each. Now, if we put that in GBP, that would be probably just over £10 each. So they're cheap enough that you can go and start putting them around the house for pretty low cost. Now, you do need to have, in Australia at least, you do need to have a licensed Sparky to do it. Fortunately, I have a good one, and it also is very, very quick. They literally pop the faceplate off, wire it into the back. It's probably going to be about a 10-minute job on each light. So then I started looking at it going, well, what are all the other things that I wouldn't mind IoTing? I've got a pool with lights that glow at night and it looks super cool. I thought, oh, maybe I could put one behind there, and then in Home Assistant, you could say when the sun sets, turn the lights on automatically, and then at like, I don't know, 10 p.m. each night, by the time I've gone to bed, turn them off if they're still on or something like that. So it's just sort of opens up a whole new world of opportunities, like automatically turn on the outdoor lights at sunset. As soon as there is an internet-controllable unit in there, then you start to have options. And what looks to be really neat about the Shellys is they've got a lot of stuff. In fact, I'll drop a link in the comments here. They've got a lot of stuff on their website around things like we have RESTful APIs. It's like, sweet, they've thought about this stuff. They've got integration into Home Assistant as well as all of the other popular IoT platforms. So I'll just drop in the comments there. That's the Shelly One. I'm pretty excited about that because if they genuinely are cheap enough, and they work as advertised, which everyone who has them seems to be really, really happy with them, that's super, super cool. Now, there are a few comments, not so much here in the comments, but on Twitter as well, people saying, get like IoT-connected switches, and then the IoT-connected switches can talk to the other IoT things. And I'm just a bit, first of all, most of the IoT switches I see are not particularly pretty, not compared to those Clipsal Saturn Zens, which look really sweet. And I'm just a little bit concerned about something which is such a basic functional thing making that dependent on internet. So having like an internet connected light with an internet connected switch, and one needs to talk to the other over IP in order for things to work. And I do sort of lament the fact that we're taking the most simple possible circuit, which is like power to a light bulb, and somehow making that internet dependent. And I appreciate all that can be self-contained, so perhaps it's not internet dependent, it's IP dependent, but your Wi-Fi router needs to be working. So yeah, imagine it's like I power down the server rack. Oh, I can't turn the lights on anymore. So that's not an environment that I want to create. Now, there's a comment in here from Daniel, which I think is very, very relevant. The thing right now about IoT is a disgusting vendor lock-in. I don't see any way of it outside of standards or regulation. And of course, if we got standards or regulation, then everyone would complain about stifling innovation. The thing that, look, you're right, it is an absolute mess. And even when I look at this, box in front of me. Now, it's very, very, very tiny writing, but as far as I can tell, it says works with, Google Assistant, Alexa, Siri, and also if this, then that. Now, that's great. It works with basically a Google ecosystem, an Amazon ecosystem, and an Apple ecosystem, or a third-party online-dependent event trigger, which is effectively what IFT, as I've heard people referring to it lately, is. But what about the other things? And do I really want to be dependent on one of the massive tech stacks in order to make it work? And then you go and get a whole bunch of other IoT things, and what I've consistently found is that a lot of them don't seem to work with HomeKit. And originally my whole thinking was I want to use my Apple bits and pieces and just do HomeKit. So they'll work with the Google ecosystem or an Amazon ecosystem and not with the HomeKit. And this is the value proposition of Home Assistant. And as clunky as I do find it at many times, at least it is autonomous and it's open source and it's community driven. And it should sort of sit there and prevail across everything else. So as far as I'm concerned, everything I'm putting in the house at the moment, it's good having those integrations, but it has to work with HomeKit as well. Another question here, what about discontinuation causing issues? Now, this is a really, really good question. So what if there was discontinuation of something like the Shelly? Because when I think about the lights down in my media room, what if the Shelly is no longer supported? Well, the light switches on the wall will still work, and this is super, super important. So even if, I mean, let's say we all go through to a different version of IP or something like that, and then these things no longer work and it's 20 years from now, the buttons on the wall will still work. So I did not want to be dependent at all on the internet being there, the network being up, stuff working over IP. So this solves that. So that's pretty important. Did you ever get that IoT candle thing? No, so the IoT candle, and in case you're wondering, yes, it's as stupid as it sounds. The IoT candle was a Kickstarter project. Scott Helm and I both backed it because we're like, screw this, man, I want a candle. Like, I want to set stuff on fire remotely. This is what I want to see. Like, how weird can stuff get? But unfortunately, they discontinued it, maybe because common sense prevailed. Could be that. Anyway. Someone else is saying that the best use of IoT light switches, in my opinion, is just using them to control dumb lights. And I honestly think this might be where the value is. In fact, I've been making notes around, let me see, where's my notebook here on all the house stuff, all the different scenarios that I want to be able to have, let's just say, lights working on. So, for example, there needs to be a single state, or well, this is really dual. Let me edit that. Dual state lights. So lights that have a physical switch, they go on or off, and then that's it. So maybe you can toggle warmth. So a lot of these down lights have a little manual switch on the back where you can change the warmth of the light between three different states. And you pop it down out of the roof, you move it to one of the three positions, you pop it back up in the roof. So it's not made for like changing it every day, but if you went, these have been up for a while, I think it could be a bit warmer, change it. So basically dual state lights. I also want to have IoT enabled lights that change color and brightness, which is effectively what the ones up here are in my office. I want to have physical dimmer switches. So here's the other thing. In my media room, I want to have physical dimmer switches in order to control basically the lighting for the whole room. Now, your problem then is that all your dimmer switches certainly when I went into the electrical store yesterday and had a look at everything that was available, they all have physical states which go from, basically you go counterclockwise until they lock, they stop, or go clockwise, and then they go back, let's say 180 degrees, and then they stop. So they get physically maintained in some position of state. Now, of course, you can dim IoT lights, but your problem then is that you're all the way around clockwise as bright as you can go on the physical light, and then you go into IoT and then you dim it down. So now your physical state is discontinued from your digital state. And then I thought about it and went, I actually don't change the brightness of them that much, and I can get off my ass and actually move the toggle in that room. So I'm going to have a dimmer, but it's only going to be dimmable by physical state. It's not going to be dimmable digitally. So that was one of the things, physical state dimmer. Now, there are other cases where I want an IoT dimmer unit. Now, you can get that with the Shelly. Now, I'll give you a good example. There might be something where I don't feel there's a need. Let's say the my parents scenario. My mum and dad are around one day. They're watching some TV, and they go, oh, it'd be nice if it was a little bit dimmer, and they go and do that. There are other places, such as in my hallway, where there's a long row of ceiling lights. I'd like to be able to set the dimmable state of those, but I'm quite okay just to set them via an app, because no one else really needs to come and change the dimmable state. They need to be able to turn them on or off, but not necessarily the dimmable state. I also want physical switches that imply state, existing switches that are either up or down. And in fact, I'll rephrase it. It's not that I want them, it's that I have them. So in my, basically everywhere in the house, all the normal switches have a physical state, on or off. Now, maybe in my office, I still want to have those switches, partly just due to cost. Like, it starts to get really expensive when you start getting those nice Saturn Zen switches, and then you get the Sparky in to replace stuff. And then what makes it extra bad is that they're different physical size. So you then have to have a plasterer to fill in the gap around it. And then you have to have a painter to paint that. And then if it's on a big wall, you can't really just paint one spot. Otherwise, you see the marks around it. So you've got to paint the whole freaking wall. And I can do that in the media room because I'm getting other stuff painted anyway. But I still want stuff to work in other...
I'm not sure I understand.
All right, Siri, come on, cut this out. This is getting stupid. So I still want to be able to have the physical switches. Now, the nice thing is, and I shared a video on Twitter earlier in the week, the Shellys, when you have them behind a physical switch, it doesn't matter which direction the switch is going. The switch will change the state to be the opposite of whatever state effectively the Shelly and consequently the light is in at the time. So you can have the physical switch on and then digitally turn the light off and then go back to the switch and turn the switch the other way, and it will change the physical state of the light. Now, I've also got another scenario here, which is physical switches that don't imply state, push button only, may have a power indicator, which is effectively those Saturn Zens. I'm just going to start with one room, and I know slippery slope and all that. I'm going to start with one room. I'm going to see how that goes. Now, looking at these comments. It's amazing to think that electronic lights are just a recent thing in history. Well, I mean, this is true. Like, how long have we had electronic lights? Early 1900s? Since before any of us can remember, but it is amazing to think of how quickly they've changed and they've become completely different things. What kind of notebook are you using? Lenovo laptops? I assume that's what you mean. Any thoughts on how Hue went from IoT to works when you're at home? I'm not quite sure what the point of that is. And look, even on the Philips Hue, one of the things I discovered at Philips Hue are basically about the most expensive IoT lights you can get. Now, that said, I do have one there, a Hugo, and there's a Hugo there, and there's a Hue light strip under here. And the primary reason for using Hue in these places is that Hue uses Zigbee in order to communicate back to the hub. You can use the Zigbee protocol to talk directly to a Zigbee stiffer, which is what I've got plugged into my Raspberry Pi, which runs my home assistant, blog post coming with all that. Any powered Zigbee device can also work as a repeater. So it basically solved the problem of not having enough Zigbee signal up the top of my house here. But one of the really nice things about the Hue is that the Hue, when paired with the hub, does always maintain state. So I've got a fireplace downstairs. Yes, I know Australia, Gold Coast, but it's ambience. And I've got physical switches on the wall that literally turn it on or off But I can pull out the app and I can, and I do this very, very rarely, change the brightness or the color. And then when I power it off, the hub maintains state, turn it back on, the lights, even though they've got no state maintenance within the lights themselves, they pull that state back from the hub and they go back to whatever brightness and color they were before. So the hues are good. I'm getting a big mirror downstairs, which is going to have a Hue light strip behind it, so it sort of glows. It's going to be epic. Glows on the outside. So when that's done, maybe I'll do a video from downstairs or something. Now, what else is in here? I'm not a fan of colored lights on the roof. They're better in lamps. Yeah, look, so Cameron's made a comment here saying he's not a fan of colored lights on the roof. They're better in lamps. And I got to kind of agree. I've got the ones up above me and not on at the moment, but I set them to pink just to see if I could maintain the state. And every time I look at them, I was like, why the hell did I make those lights pink? Like, this is nice in the lamps on the desk and it makes the glow around me, but as downlights, I don't think it makes a lot of sense, which is good because it's much cheaper not to have that. So there's a question here about C. So C says, C's home network isn't sophisticated enough to segregate devices. How are regular people supposed to be able to set up IoT devices without opening themselves up to huge security issues? Oh, man, this is a pain. So I'm on version 2 of my home network now, version 2 of my Ubiquiti home network. So I put in a Dream Machine and rack and everything a few months ago. And prior to that, I had two different networks. I had a primary home network and an IoT network. And they were both on different VLANs. And the primary network could see into the IoT VLAN, but not the other way around. So the IoT VLAN couldn't see back. And I set it all up that way, and it was painful, very painful. And I'm going to explain why in a moment. But in version 2 of my network, I've kept those two networks, but I don't have them VLAN'd. But, of course, because I've still got all the IoT things are on the IoT network and all the non-IoT things are on the non-IoT network, it's just that each can see each other. They're on the same subnets. There's no VLAN, nothing like that. It's going to be easy for me to do that later on, but I haven't done it yet. And the main reason is that you just continually hit barriers where things don't play nice with each other. For example, Sonos. So Sonos, I've got a Sonos Play 5 in the kitchen, and then I've got a Sonos Move in the lounge room. They sync together. They're both, let's call them 10 meters apart or something. So when you walk around, you can hear the two of them, and it plays music in sync everywhere, which is lovely. But in order for Sonos to be able to communicate with the app, it has to actually see back to the network that, in this case, my phone is on. If it can't see back in there, it dies. Now, short of going through and sniffing TCP and UDP and then figuring out which protocols it's using, which ports it's using, and then opening them back up, which is now starting to get super, 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 super messy, I just got to the point where it's like, look, let's just have the two networks, and then eventually I'm going to exhaust the IP address range if I keep this up, and then I can just put them on different subnets or something like that. But in answer to C's question here, It is absolutely painful to try and VLAN IoT from primary network. And a really good example of this is that some of the cheaper LED light strips I've been getting and putting in the kids' rooms, in Australia they're sold through Bunnings, or they were sold through Bunnings. You can't seem to get them anymore. They're called Arlec, and Arlec is a system called Grid Connect. Fun fact, also the same underlying system as Tuya, and Tuya actually integrates into Home Assistant, so I've put them all in there now. Anyway, the way you set them up is you pull out your device, you know, so your phone, and you connect to the lights, and whatever network your phone is connected to, that's what the lights will connect to. So if you're connected to your primary network, your lights end up in the primary network. So you've got to go into your phone, you've got to connect to your IoT network. Now, you probably don't want to remember the IoT network on the phone, otherwise you never know which one the phone's going to end up on because there's two different networks. So you've got to connect to IoT, connect the lights, then jump off, and then back onto your – and it's just like, I find this a pain in the ass, and I live in this world. What do you think it's like for normal everyday people? So – simple answer here, I don't think that different networks, different VLANs are very practical for most people. Definitely not your normal average everyday consumers. Plus, most of your consumer grade home router equipment is not going to allow you to do VLANs either. Can you paint stuff yourself? Probably also not the highest and best use of my time. So no, I'm not going to paint stuff myself. I'm definitely not going to go down that route. Can we talk about my injury? I'm getting better. The beer is helping. In all seriousness, my head hurts much less now. Maybe it's the beer. All right, so what else did I have in here? If I go back into my list of things, there were a couple of things actually this week from the Twitters that I thought were interesting. So here's one of them. Now, this led to much discussion. A German website got hacked, rc-network.de. Now, this seems to be RC is in radio control. So there's a bunch of people talking about radio control planes and cars and things like that. And the breach notice here that someone sent me says, "Dear RC network users, on August 11, 2020, the RC network platform was breached through an as yet unknown security hole in our forum software. I just bet you it's unpatched VBulletin." It's always unpatched VBulletin. "Unfortunately, user data had already been stolen by the time the platform was discovered and shut down." Was it stolen or was it copied? Do you still have it or is it gone? Anyway, semantics. "The following data fields were provided by each user stolen: username, email address, homepage, ICQ account name," that dates it, "AIM account name," also, "Yahoo," also dates it, "MSN account," also dates it, "date of birth." Now, I made the point here in this tweet. Why on earth do you need to store people's dates of birth just to chat about RCs? There was much interesting feedback. Now, where do we begin with this? And I have been vocal about my thoughts on this before. The feedback basically said, because COPPA, so COPPA in the US, Child Online Protection Act, or equivalent, because there are regulations within things like GDPR about how old people need to be in order to use online services. And this is a bullshit answer. And here's why it's bullshit. There are many legitimate cases where you need to have an age gate. A really good example, you cannot go to a website about beer here in Australia and read about beer unless you're 18. So the website, in fact, let's do this for fun. What am I drinking? Bent Spoke. If I was to go to Bent Spoke Beer, and we'll see what happens here. Bent Spoke Beer, bentspokebrewing.com.au. Now, we go to this website. Wants to know my location. No. Can we see any information here? Oh, this is interesting. We're not getting an age gate. Maybe things have changed. Wow. Gee, these are nice beers too. Big and hoppy. Anyway, what would normally happen? Maybe, I'm sure. You know what? I've literally built websites before that have age gates. Many, many years ago, I built the Jack Daniels website in Australia. Jack Daniels, I think I did. Was it that or was it something different? It was something similar to that. Let's go Jack Daniels promotions. Here we go. Perfect example. Okay. Jackspromo.com.au. If you go to jackspromo.com.au, you literally get redirected to agegate.aspx. And the website says, "Please enter your date of birth." Now, let's enter the date of birth as 2011. Enter. "Sorry, you're not of legal drinking age. You can't go any further." Let's enter. Oh, you know, not only did it say you can't go any further, but it just literally redirected me to drinkwise.org.au. This is where you can learn all about how you probably shouldn't be drinking. Isn't it interesting that Jack Daniels actually redirects there? Anywho, the point is that you're entering an age into a web form, and then that is an age gate. There is no sensible reason to store that data. And this bugs the hell out of me because we should be following this whole principle of data minimization. So only store what you need for as long as you need it. Ooh. Now, I just had my... Oh, boy. My camera just shut down. All right. So let's... It literally said it got too hot. So I'm going to ask, can anyone still hear the audio? Because if you can still hear the audio, I'll keep going and see if my camera wants to reboot itself. But if not, then we're going to be well and truly over. Wow, it's never done that before, and I've been going for 44 minutes. All right, thank you, Gordon, everyone. Okay, wow, that's super weird. I'll leave the camera off for a moment, and then I'll try and turn it on. So let me keep ranting. And also, if you're listening to the podcast, nothing interesting is happening at all. So I posit that if you ask someone for their age, and then if they are less than 18, you don't let them in. And if they are 18 or older, you let them in. You have achieved the objective. You don't need to store the age. And then I literally had people in this thread come back and say, if you don't ask for the actual age, they could lie. And I'm like, I literally just lied by making myself 9 years old. So why do you think that if you don't ask for the actual age, that is somehow going to change anything whatsoever? Which is just, it's just absolutely ridiculous. So we had a fun argument on Twitter about that, and I really don't know why anyone thinks that just by like literally storing this data in a database somewhere where it's not going to be visible to other people makes any sense whatsoever. All right, so there was that. Now, just turn my camera on. The camera works again, but I don't think that it is broadcasting again. But we'll see, because we're getting towards the end anyway, and it has been going for a little while. Now, I'm just seeing the comments. Troy did not get hacked. My camera literally said it got too hot and it shut down. Now, to Burton's question in there, is it hot outside? No, it's only 20 degrees Celsius, and it's not hot in the office. It's about 28 in the office. But, yeah, I wonder why the camera did that. Very strange. All right. So, you know what? I'm actually going to hold the last thing over because I want to be able to do that on camera next week. And I think maybe this is a sign that I need to go and rest my weary head. So look, I think we sort of got enough out of this before the camera died and caused a forced end to it. I'm going to hold over this next thing to next week because it is something that was in the press just today that I'm actually pretty excited about. But today is close enough to next week, so I'll hold that over. Hopefully next week I'll also have some feedback on those Shelly ones and something to talk about in terms of IoT stuff that does actually work well also. So thanks very much for watching up until the last 2 minutes, and thank you very much for listening then. And I might have a look at why the camera does this and see if I can fix it before next time. Thanks, folks. See ya.